combination. Many people have questions about the best treatment for heart disease following the publication of a study earlier this week that questioned whether many people who've had heart surgery actually needed it. Every year, about 1 million heart patients in this country undergo a procedure called angioplasty, where a doctor inflates a small balloon to clear a blocked artery and inserts a tiny mesh tube called a stent to keep it open. The study of more than 2,000 patients with non-emergency problems found that outcomes were just as good with drugs and a healthy lifestyle. If you have questions about this, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. And joining us now to answer them is Dr. Stephen Nissen. He's the chairman of the Department of Cardiovascular Medicine at the Cleveland Clinic. He's with us today from member station WCPN in Cleveland, Ohio. Nice to have you on the program today.
It's a pleasure, Neil.
And how big a deal is this study?
Well, it's a very important study. The study involved, it was called COURAGE, which is an apropos name. Mm-hmm. And the study involved 2,300 patients with coronary blockages. And they had to have stable chest pain, and they had several episodes a week at least of pain. Everybody in the study received the best medical treatment, drugs to lower cholesterol and blood pressure, and lifestyle counseling. Half of them received a stent, one or more stents, and the other half received only the medical treatment and lifestyle counseling. They were followed for 4.6 years on average, and the outcome that was measured was the risk of death or having a heart attack. In fact, at the end of those period of time, at 4.6 years, there were about the same number of patients in both groups that had died or had a heart attack. Perhaps even more surprising, at 1 year, 3 years, and 5 years, nearly as many patients receiving medicines alone were free of chest pain compared to those that had actually received a stent, so that the benefits of the stent were somewhat modest.
Mm-hmm. And that's what some of the surgeons say. Look, we don't first of all, let me point out, ask you, this was not about emergency people. People are currently having heart attacks. In those cases, angioplasty and stents are called for?
It's extremely important to understand that. If people have chest pain, sudden and onset and severe, they need to get to a hospital emergency room, preferably by ambulance. And most of the time, they're going to end up going directly to a heart catheterization laboratory, often for a stent to be placed. We do not want this study to dissuade patients from getting the kind of prompt treatment you need when you have urgent chest pain.
Mm-hmm. So this is for people with what's called stable heart disease. And again, that's but some surgeons that I read in the news story said, wait a minute, we use these operations. They're better at relieving chest pain, angina.
Well, let me give you the figures. At the end of 1 year, 66% of the patients that received a stent were completely free of chest pain. But 58% of the patients that received medical therapy were also free of chest pain. And so we gained about 8 percentage points of freedom from chest pain overall with the placement of a stent, which is a fairly complicated procedure. I think the take-home message from this is that it's okay to start with medical therapy, with drugs and lifestyle changes. And more than half of those patients by the end of a year are going to be completely free of chest pain, and they'll never need, at least not in the short term, to have a stent placed. And on the other hand, if people have a lot more difficulty, if the pain interferes with their lifestyle, then they can have a stent placed at any time. Delaying placing a stent doesn't put them at any added risk of dying or having a heart attack.
Let's get some listeners on with their questions. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. Again, our guest is Dr. Stephen Nissen. And we'll begin with Saul. Saul with us from San Antonio.
Hi.
Hi, Saul. You're on the air.
Thank you. I think it's a fascinating study, and it gives us a lot of insight. Being a critical care internist for many, many years, I have a little bit of a problem, and the problem is getting patients to comply with lifestyle changes. And if we're going to have a choice between the stent and lifestyle changes, which we have a great deal of trouble putting together, how do we justify only going with lifestyle changes.
And lifestyle changes is briefly diet and exercise.
Diet, exercise, and weight reduction, control of diabetes, elimination of smoking. There are a whole bunch of things that go with lifestyle changes.
Mm-hmm. Doctor,
it's a pretty impossible problem in the general population.
Dr. Nissen?
Well, it's not impossible, but it is difficult.
No, pretty impossible.
And I would say that it's important to understand how this study was done. Both groups of patients got the best counseling they could be provided with and the best medical therapy. So they were getting really the equal treatment. It means compliance was very likely very similar in the two groups. And so then the question was, given the current circumstances with how patients comply with medical therapy, was there an added benefit of placing a stent? And there was an added benefit. There was somewhat less chest pain, but it was a modest benefit. And a lot of people that just got the medicines and lifestyle changes, regardless of their compliance, were free of pain at the end of 1 year, 3 years, and 5 years.
Thanks very much. Saul, I'm sorry.
It's impressive, but I still put out the caveat that unless we have a motivated group of patients, we're going to have long-term problems in getting the type of statistical significance that we're talking about in this study.
Saul, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Let's go now to Lois, and Lois is with us from Travis City in Michigan.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
My husband a few years ago was having discomfort, not acute pain, discomfort, when we were walking and more in his back, upper back neck, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, finally the doctor said, go ahead, have a stress test. And we have a very strong and well reputation here at the Heart Center area here in Traverse City, Michigan. Anyway, that showed there was, they decided that he needed an angiogram to check out, and he did have blockage with, the lower left ventricle. It's been a while since I read the report.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that was most distressing on this was that when the doctor talked to him after this, before he had this, before he went ahead with this, was the way the doctor came on, frankly, was like a used car salesman. And because my husband liked to play tennis and be active, the doctor just kind of went blurry on any medication or any other procedure, which I tried to raise, because he said, I can't promise you, you know, like with tennis, kind of thing, active with medicine, you know, you have better chance with a stent, et cetera.
So he was selling the angioplasty and the stent?
Not only that, then he had the same kind of problem Vice President Cheney did, had to go back in. I ended up, because I'd learned a long time ago with my own problems, to do a lot of medical research myself, particularly after living in Ann Arbor. He had an acute rheumatoid arthritis attack, which I tracked down to the IV heparin as a possibility, which is a rare occurrence. But anyway, here's the thing. I've always gotten copies of reports for years.
Yeah, well, why don't we go back to the question
Wait, there's one important thing here to say to you. There was no evidence in any of his stress tests until after the procedure of any actual, myocardial, anyway, a heart attack,
mm-hmm.
until afterwards. And we knew that was kind of a risk. He will not go back for stress tests. I started him out with, he was diabetic at the time, he still is, with going back on slow exercise and everything. He's 80, he's born in
20. I'm sorry, Lois, we can't get the entire medical history, nor can Dr. Nissen diagnose on the radio. But getting back to the point, I think there is a concern among some people that doctors were too quick to adopt the angioplasty and stent procedure before waiting for studies like this one.
Well, your listener, of course, makes a very good point, and that's why this study is so important, is it tells us that patients have choices. This is really about patient choices. And I think we can now say to patients like this gentleman, look, if you want to give a trial of medical treatment with drugs and lifestyle changes, there's a better than 50-50 chance you're going to become pain-free and you can avoid having a stent procedure with some potential complications down the road. If, however, your lifestyle, playing tennis and other things, if you just can't get there with medicines, we can always go back and put the stent in, and we haven't put you in harm's way by delaying and giving medicine a chance to work. So it's a very important choice now that we can offer patients.
Here's an email we got from Dermot in Boston. As a health professional, it's upsetting to me that angioplasty, stenting, PTCA, PCI, etc. is referred to as cardiac surgery. In this and other programs, it's certainly not surgery. These procedures are performed by cardiologists, not cardiac surgeons, which is an entirely different specialty, requiring a different training and different board certification. Cardiac surgery would be coronary artery bypass, grafting, valve replacement, etc., all of which most often require opening the patient's chest. I and many other healthcare professionals listening would much enjoy this disambiguation announced on the air. I guess those of us who are mere civilians think you take a knife and you cut me open, that's surgery.
Okay, let me tell you that your listener is absolutely right. In fact, at the top of the hour, you described me as a cardiac surgeon, which I'm not.
I apologize for that.
And I am a cardiologist. And what the listener is pointing out is that there are two branches of heart disease treatment. Cardiac surgeons who perform operations where they open the chest and they sew in bypass grafts and so on. And then cardiologists like myself, where we do medical treatment, and some cardiologists called interventional cardiologists perform angioplasties and stents, which do not involve opening the chest. They're actually done through a little catheter, a little tube put in from the groin. And so there you have it. I've explained it on National Public Radio. What's the difference between a cardiologist and a cardiac surgeon?
Well, thank you very much for that. We're talking with Dr. Stephen Nissen, chairman of the Department of Cardiovascular Medicine at the Cleveland Clinic. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we get another caller on the line. And this is Rakesh. Rakesh with us from Chicago.
Hello, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
Well, it's good to talk to you, Dr. Nissen.
My pleasure.
I'm just a little unhappy that this study had to be done at this stage. This study should have been done before the cardiologists popularized the angioplasty so much. We should have had this information before offering this treatment to all the patients. The other problem I have is, well, there are two other things. One, that the study had to be done in VA hospitals and in Canada, probably because the cardiologists were unwilling to accrue patients. And the third problem is that I see very little improvement in the medical therapy since the CAS study came out 30 years ago, you know, where we were seeing 70-80% survival in patients treated medically. So to me, that seems a serious indictment of cardiology.
Well, I actually don't see it that way. And let me see if I can explain to your listeners. Stents were introduced in 1994. This study was planned and designed somewhere around 1998 or 1999. Remember, these people had to be enrolled in the study and then followed for 5 years or more. It takes time to do research like this. And I know we'd like to have instant answers, but we can't do that. We have to study things over a longer period of time. Knowing what happens in 9 months or a year isn't necessarily the same as what happens in 5 years. I think the folks that did this study did a terrific job. They got it up and running pretty soon after stents became commonplace, and they've gotten us an answer that is very, very helpful. I did want to mention one other thing that was brought up, and that is, what about medical therapy? Why did we see the result that we saw? And it is interesting that medical therapy, I don't agree with your listener, has improved dramatically. Our drugs to lower cholesterol are much more effective. Our drugs to lower blood pressure, our blood thinners are better. And so I think the reason we're seeing this result is we've got good treatments for patients. Stents are good treatment, medicine's good treatment, and if we use each wisely, reserving the stents for those that need them and giving very good medical therapy to others, then we're going to get the best outcome for the most number of people. So I think this is an exciting result for patients because it does, in fact, give us options.
Mm-hmm. Here's an email question from Samantha in Grass Valley, California. It's my understanding that in the past, heart disease research almost exclusively involved men. Were there equal numbers of men and women in this study?
Well, that's a great question. Being a study that was done largely in the VA hospital system, this study is dominated by men, and it is a huge problem. we need more studies dedicated to women. We know that coronary heart disease in women is different. Fortunately, the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute has been working very hard on a variety of initiatives to get more studies done in women, and I wish we had more women in this study as well. One thing that hasn't come up yet that I thought perhaps we ought to at least talk about a little bit is what about bypass surgery?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are three options, not two: medicines, stenting, and bypass surgery. And it's important to understand that bypass surgery has been shown in certain patient populations to reduce the risk of heart attack and death. And so I think you may see a little bit of a tilt now back to doing more bypass operations. So as we learn more, we find out sometimes that our older therapies have some significant advantages. And I think things are going to come a little bit more back into balance now that we have a study like COURAGE.
And finally, we just have a few seconds left, but I hope you can answer Tom in Ann Arbor's email question. Wouldn't delaying a stent procedure carry a potential risk that it would be needed later when a patient is older and surgery more dangerous? And again, I guess we've just been told it's not surgery.
It isn't surgery, and in fact, there is a little bit of increase in risk of a stent as you get older, but that risk doesn't go up very steeply. And so one of the principles of medicine in Latin is primum non nocere, which means above all, do no harm. And so anytime you can avoid a procedure that might have some risks, it's good medical practice to avoid it. What we're saying here is, give medicine a chance in most patients, many patients with stable symptoms. You can always do a stent later if they need it.
Dr. Nissen, thanks very much for your time. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Stephen Nissen is chairman of the Department of Cardiovascular Medicine at the Cleveland Clinic. He joined us today from our member station in Cleveland, WCPN. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.